Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
Hey, podcast listeners. Welcome to another episode of the Advance Your Art podcast. I'm your host, Yuri Cataldo, broadcasting live from cold, snowy Boston. Hopefully where you are, it is much warmer right now. I know in Boston, we thought the weather was taking a early turn because it was nice and sunny and warming up a couple weeks ago. And then we got hit by a lovely nor'easter and everything has changed. It's been cold and snowy and icy ever since. So every once in a while, which may happen on this recording, the snow is going to crash down off the roof onto the ground, and it is a thunderous crash that sounds like somebody had, like when I first heard it a couple times, I thought that something fell over in my basement. It was that loud. So hopefully during this recording, nothing like that happens. Today I'm trying something a little bit different because I've been fighting a cold as well as many other people because of the changes in the weather. So I've got a lot of interviews that I'll be releasing fairly soon. But in the meantime, I'm going to try a little bit of an investigation that I've been doing. As part of this podcast, and actually what inspired me to do this, is the fact that I think that artists are one of the best entrepreneurs out there, and in fact, art training is one of the best training grounds to start a company and to start your own freelancing business. It's just that many times in universities fail to help give art students the proper guidance. And that's how I was when I went through art school and I had to figure it out on my own. And so I'm creating the podcast that I wish I had when I was in school, which is why I choose so many people from different artistic backgrounds and ask them questions about how they've used their art skills to further their business career. And part of this, and this is why I'm doing this today, is I am writing a book about it because I think it's important and I think these ideas need to get out there. Also, I'm saying this aloud during this podcast because I want you as my listeners to keep me accountable, to keep me going with this. Because it's very easy, because of the fact that it's an independent project on my own, that I can just put it off and not think about it anymore. And I've been doing that for a while. But I'm pretty far along in the process right now, and I want to release some of the chapters and some of the ideas ahead of time. I'm going to actually be doing that during today's little bit of in-between-isode. But before I get to that, I want to talk about a new book I've been reading, because I think it's exciting and it's something that everybody needs to read. It's called Never Split the Difference, Negotiate as Your Life Depended on It by Chris Voss. Chris Voss was a FBI hostage negotiator, and a lot of the techniques he uses and talks about in this book, of course, he's used in real life FBI negotiations, but also he teaches at Harvard Business School and a few other places. And I'm someone who sometimes doesn't like negotiating. I do it occasionally to put myself, you know, get myself out of my comfort zone. But the techniques and strategies he uses are some that a lot of people don't talk about, and I've used them in my everyday life, and they just make things easier. So if you've got a chance and you're looking for a new book to read, it's a quick read, full of really great information, so I highly recommend that. I'll put a link in the show notes. Also, if you want an Audible version of it, I don't know if you know every podcast talks about their Audible accounts. I've linked up one, so if you want a free Audible book and you don't have that already, you can go to audibletrial.com/Yuri, and when you click on that, you'll get a free audiobook. I get a little bit of a kickback from Audible, not very much, but it's something, and it helps me work on new projects, work on the book, as well as put out this podcast. So today I want to talk about an artist that I I didn't interview personally, but sat very close to the person who was doing an interview, and that is David Cho. So today I'm going to talk about three things that I've learned from the artist David Cho. And if you don't know who David Cho is, rather than you can Google him, but the quick thing is he's the artist who worked at Facebook. And he created and painted all of the walls at Facebook. And he was a successful artist before he did all of that. But once, you know, that happened at Facebook, he became one of the richest artists in the world. I think he's like the top three now because of what he did at Facebook. So I was at a conference in last September, and he was being interviewed by the organizer of that conference. And the conference itself was focused on the idea of, you know, of creating businesses, new ways to think about partnerships. And David Cho particularly was brought in because he is someone who has become very successful monetarily, and his goal is to spend all of his money before he dies. He doesn't want to leave anything for anybody else. He wants to die penniless, which is his decision. So he was brought in, and the person doing the interview was going to basically ask him how he spends his money and smart, creative ways on how he gives back and adds and spends his money. And so he did some of that. But most of the time in this hour-long conversation he had was him telling about his story and how he became an artist and worked with that and how he got introduced to Facebook. And rather than go into like ways that he's spending his money, it took a weird turn toward the end where he basically talked about how having that much money, in effect, ruined his life. And so I want to go into some of those details and tell you the story of David Cho. You know, he has a wonderful foundation where he's giving back a lot of things, but it's very interesting because he was, and I'll get into this, but he was a successful artist beforehand, and he was doing very well for himself, and he was very comfortable. And then suddenly, once this giant sum of money came his way, it basically threw him for a loop. So this is what I want to get into today and talk about the tale of David Cho. I'm doing a lot of research in artists, some of which I've interviewed, others I have not. But this is part of my writing process where I want to bring out, particularly in my book, which helps connect the dots between art training and then what to do after that and artistic success in either the arts or other things, and how other artists, whether traditionally trained or not, have done it. So David Cho is definitely a great example. And so if you are interested in me doing more of these, please let me know. I'm easy to find. Again, it's Yuri, Y-U-R-I, at advanceyourart.com. Please feel free to reach out to me anytime. If you like this, or if you don't like this, or if you want some variety, I thought this would be one of those. So David Cho began his career, as so many artists do, and that's honestly by starving. So to make ends meet in the beginning, he unfortunately wrote some bad checks and spent some time in jail. So when he got out, he had an idea, and he thought that you know, he had a little bit of a gambling streak in him, that he would go to Vegas and try to win some money. So at the time, he was living in L.A., so it wasn't a far drive. He would go, and he would always win money in the beginning, but then he didn't know when to walk away. And the first few times he went out there, he would be up a few hundred dollars and then lose it all and then drive home sad and depressed. At the same time he was trying to do that, he was working on his art career, and he was hanging his work and paintings, like so many artists I've seen do. They hang them in coffee shops, and he would put them for about $50, which he thought was grossly underpriced, and they probably were. But because of that, he sold nothing. So he was spiraling into some little bits of depression. He was losing money, gambling. He wasn't making any money selling at the coffee shop. And he decided that at some point, things had to change, and he needed a solution because he was just finishing his day getting deeper and deeper in debt. So he had this sudden boost of inspiration that came to one of his friends. So one of his friends recently got one of his girlfriends pregnant, and he made this off comment remark that, you know, as a joke, that had he pulled out 5 seconds earlier, he wouldn't have been in that situation. And so that's when it hit him. That's exactly what he needed for his gambling. So he commissioned one of his friends to be the person who basically was there to stop him before things got bad. So he promised a portion of his winnings every day if he would make him walk away from the table once they hit a predestined amount. They first started with him being up $50, then $100, then $200. But the goal was, and this was his system, that they would go into a casino with a dollar amount he'd already planned out. And once he'd hit it, they would walk away. And to ensure this, he gave his friend all of his chips. So his friend was in charge of all the chips. And it came to a certain point where he talked about where he actually had his friend, and it was in the pit boss that started laughing at them, would physically like remove him from the table. Once they hit his amount, no matter how much David wanted to continue, his friend would take all his chips and physically remove him from the casino. And it worked. He began to win consistently, month after month, enough to pay his bills. And when he wasn't worried about paying his bills, this amazing thing happened with his art. Because he realized that since he wasn't trying to make all of his money from his art, that he could start charging more for it. And this started giving him some self-confidence. So he started moving his prices for his art up higher, from $50 to $2,000, because he wasn't really worried about selling it anymore. And he started going to new other places, and this caused his friends to ask him a lot of questions like, okay, so you couldn't sell your art for $50. How do you expect to sell your art for $2,000? And the truth is, and this is what he said, is he honestly didn't care. It wasn't about selling his art, and he wasn't selling art anyway, so why not value it at a price that he felt equated to his time and effort? Because of the fact he was already covering his bills, this gave him freedom to just do that. And the funniest thing happened. He actually started selling his art. So if you look at the psychology behind this, it's actually pretty simple, especially in the art world. As with anything, what something is truly worth is what somebody's willing to pay for it. By making his paintings at a $2,000 price point, there was far more perceived value in the same painting that was hanging in a coffee shop for $50. Because if somebody is selling the painting for $2,000, then it must be good, right? So now that he started making more money from his art, he was able to apply the same gambling strategy, but with bigger goals. So he was like winning $1,000 a day and more. This created a nice back and forth with him, which allowed him to charge more and more for his art and also gamble more and more in Vegas. And his art got so popular that it got the attention of the Napster founder, Sean Parker. Parker emailed Cho one day asking him or telling him how much he loved his work and that he wanted to buy some from him. But here was the rub. Parker said that his company, which again, he was running Napster at the time, was being sued for stupid amounts of money, so he was broke and couldn't really afford anything. So Cho, who had, again, been increasing his self-esteem and his value, emailed him back and said, "Thank you so much, that's great. I appreciate it, but why don't you give me a call next time when you actually have some money?" And so that's what Parker did years later. When Parker was helping the Facebook founder, Mark Zuckerberg, he called Cho to do a mural in their Silicon Valley office. Parker wanted it to be a huge thing in the face of Silicon Valley. At that time, Cho, again, increasing his value, was selling his work for $10,000 to $20,000 a pop. And so he quoted them $60,000 for the murals. Parker replied that this was a bit more than they wanted to budget at the time because they were still early on. They had some money from investments, but they wanted to know if Cho would instead take some company stock instead. So Cho had to ask what Facebook was because he had no idea, and they told him it was a social network for college students. And he replies with, "So you want me to invest my time in a company that lets college students brag about their beer pong games online? I don't think about that." So Parker insisted on having a meeting with him and Mark Zuckerberg, so that's what Cho agreed to do. And in the meeting, Cho said he still didn't have faith in the company, but he said that there was a feeling he got from Parker and Zuckerberg that they were just going to take over the world. So because of that feeling, he thought to himself, you know, I'm a gambler. And he told Parker and Zuckerberg that he didn't really give a shit about their idea or their company, but he wanted to invest in them. And so he had a feeling that they would make whatever they put out work. If you fast forward 4 years later, Cho was giving yelled at by his family member for never responding to their Facebook messages. He told them over and over again that he wasn't on Facebook and he didn't care about it. They looked into it deeper and they found out that somebody created a fake profile under David's identity. Because, again, David knew the founders of Facebook, he called up Parker and asked him to have that fake sign shut down and then turned it over to David. When David started playing on Facebook, he realized that it actually was pretty cool. So while they were on the phone doing that, Parker asked Cho if he ever checked out the value of his stock, which of course he hadn't. But he did with the final urging of Parker, and then he realized that suddenly he was worth $1 million. And he thought to himself, well, shit, I'm a millionaire. And here's the interesting thing. At that time, he was already making over $1 million a year gambling with his system. And also at that exact same time, he had just done his really big art show in London and had brought, you know, and had sold over $1 million of his artwork. So he was already a multimillionaire in there, and seeing that in another source he didn't think about, he thought was pretty cool. Because he really didn't care about the money at that time, he was offered a couple of different chances to cash out by some investment firms. But him being a gambler was like, well, you know, I don't think I'm going to sell it. And Parker actually urged him not to sell it. So he decided just to hold on, not think about it, and wait until Facebook's IPO. The IPO comes around, and he suddenly realizes, though, that his stock from the $60,000 worth of work that he did years ago was suddenly worth over $200 million, and he freaked out. He liked the fact that, you know, he was living a great life, he was enjoying some anonymity, enjoying his life, and suddenly he was really scared that his newfound wealth, particularly with a company as public as Facebook was, that suddenly then it was just going to change everything. He hoped, honestly, that nobody really knew who he was and it would be fine. Until the next day, the New York Times called him and said, we know who you are, we know what you're worth, and we're going to create a story about you. He begged and pleaded with New York Times to not run any kind of story. And basically, he thought they agreed to just not run and leave him alone, but they lied. And the next day, he was on the cover of the New York Times as Facebook's unknown millionaire. At this point in the story is where a lot of things take a weird turn, because I, like many people, would assume, you know what, that'd be amazing. Suddenly now you've got more money than you can probably spend in a lifetime, you know, money to do things, something that you always talk about and think about and joke about, but doesn't actually happen. In this case with Cho, it did happen, and he talks about this is the moment where his life was ruined, which was very different from what the interviewer and the organizer of the event thought was going to happen. If you want to see how what David Cho really sounds like, particularly when he talks about this, there's a great Barbara Walters interview that she did with him about this. And he has a very similar frame of mind and tone of voice than when he spoke live about this. But basically, people he never knew from before came out of the woodwork and kept on asking him for money. He could no longer trust people. Because of all that, all of his now access to new funds, he got addicted to a couple of different things. And basically now talks about how much that the Facebook IPO and that New York Times article has just ruined his life. But this brings up the idea of some takeaways that we can learn from David Cho and himself. So David Cho's story seems to be, and could be, you know, interpreted in one way or the other as just unadulterated luck. And there is no doubt that he was lucky in a certain way. It was very fortuitous of him to come across Sean Parker and for Sean Parker to be excited about his work and for him to, you know, take the risk on the Facebook stock, even though he didn't care about that was. But let's get rid of luck in this instance and say that he was at the right place at the right time, which ultimately is where a lot of really good things happen. But first and foremost, okay, one important thing to take a look at is his art career took off once he realized his self-worth and valued his work. As I mentioned before earlier, he was a struggling artist and had to develop a system. His system was to create some money through, well, in his instance, was gambling, but he figured out a way to leave the table ahead. When he was doing that, it made him feel better about himself and made him value his artwork more, which led to a lot more opportunities. So there are always things that we do subconsciously that are holding us back by not valuing ourselves, not valuing our businesses or relationships, whatever they are. But by creating systems and by creating ways, small incremental ways where we can find greater value in ourselves and what we're doing, it will allow us to then raise that value and charge more what we're worth. And this is what David Cho did. The more self-confidence he got, the more he charged more of what he was worth, and bigger opportunities came his way. Something we can take away of this, trusting your intuition and gut. He took some risks. I mean, obviously, he was a bit of a gambler, and we saw that from his obviously going to Vegas and gambling, but he took a risk at Facebook and working with them. Of course, it was incredibly lucky that the company he ended up working with and did a mural for was Facebook in its infancy stages. But think about this. At that time, he was offered $60,000, and he could have very easily taken the money and walked away, but he didn't. He didn't even believe in the concept that they were doing. He thought Facebook was a giant waste of time for college students. But he saw something in Zuckerberg and Parker that made him believe enough to think that they would succeed. And he trusted that intuition and he trusted his gut. And he just let it ride. He did this because, of course, he had self-confidence in himself. I'm just curious to think that, you know, of course it's easy to say this now because we all are familiar with Facebook, but you know, in 2005, when this was happening and Facebook wasn't even really a thing, I remember when Facebook came out and I was in college, would, you know, you have made the same decision back then or just taken the money? So something to think about. The third thing to look at David Cho's story is the idea behind money. So many people, and myself included, can think that sometimes that just the money itself will solve your problem. That whatever it is, suddenly, if there's just an influx of cash or a windfall, that suddenly whatever the problems are in your life will go away. And that is simply not the case. More money will actually magnify your problems. Look at where you are in your own life right now and the things that you're working on. Maybe it's better to spend more time trying to solve some of your own issues and work on your own problems first before focusing on getting some more success. Because as we clearly see in this one, whatever things that David was struggling with back when he was an artist, a starving artist, those things just got more and more magnified when suddenly this giant windfall happened. And again, I encourage everyone to look at the Barbara Walters interview because it really does paint a strong picture of just how unhappy he is at this moment. Because again, him on stage in front of the audience that was there has a very similar feeling to the interview that happened with Barbara Walters. So there I give you, that is the things I've learned from David Cho, who again, absolutely fascinating, and his story of what he's done is definitely one that is truly monumental and amazing. Because, you know, think about this, how many people come across an opportunity to just to do what they do and to do what they love and just so happen to stumble across one of the biggest, you know, upcoming tech companies in their infancy, paint the murals, and then get this huge windfall from that. So again, I'll be doing some more of these. Please let me know if there are other artists you're interested in hearing about. There's a lot that I'm researching, either through reading their biographies or just of my own interviews, as well as listening to other people's interviews of them. And as those come out, I will be releasing that, as well as some more tips to strategies that I have been working on and going to be releasing in the book. So again, if any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm easy to find. Also, if you are working on projects that you need a second opinion on, I'd be happy to help out. That's Yuri@advanceyourart.com. Thank you again for listening in today, and I hope everyone has a wonderful, warm day. Thank you. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Advance Your Art Podcast. If you like this episode, please go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button so that every single time I release a new episode, it will go directly to you without even thinking about it. If you're interested in hearing older episodes, please go to advanceyourart.com where you can find the catalog of everything I've done so far, as well as contact information and projects I'm working on. Thank you again, and have a great day.